Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Here at Podcast One and the Steve Austin Show, we would like to say thank you for listening to our show and would like to ask a small favor of you. It will only take a few minutes, and if you're one of the first people to do it, we'll give you something in return. We need you to complete a short survey because the information you give us can help us make things better every day. Just go to podcastone.study and everything will be right there for you. Again, that's podcastone.study. The first 125 people who complete the survey will receive a $10 gift card to restaurants.com. Then, one person will be selected at random to receive a $100 Amazon gift card. All of our shows, including the Steve Austin Show, are supported by advertisers, so filling this out will really help us out. Once more, please go to podcastone.study, and thank you for listening.
The following program is a podcastone.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah!
Hell yeah!
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Steve Austin Show. I'm coming to you from the Broken Skull Ranch out here in Nevada, about to open up a can of audio wolf ass with my special guest, my longtime close personal friend, Jim Ross, senior advisor and lead announcer for All Elite Wrestling. I tell you what, when I started the podcast back after a six-month absence, I really wanted to try to have people in front of me. And I was able to have Tony Khan over for an outstanding interview and a great visit. I really enjoyed talking to that guy. And then I went down to Austin, Texas, and got to talk in person with the world's strongest man, Mark Henry. And what a powerful podcast that was, as that guy dropped so much knowledge. It was unbelievable. I can't wait to talk to both these guys again. Tony Khan's supposed to come back during football season, and I would love to go back down to Austin and shoot the breeze with Mark Henry again, because we only scratched the surface, and that guy was an incredible interview. So anyway, this week we're talking on Skype. I tried to make a deal with myself that I wanted human beings in front of me for every single podcast, but according to my schedule, that is just not possible. But it's a great connection because Jim Ross is on Skype in Norman, Oklahoma, in his home. I've got a great connection set up over here in Nevada. So we're talking all things professional wrestling. We're going to talk about the chair, the history of the chair, chair shots, taboo or acceptable, consequences, injuries, CTE, razor blades, blade jobs, PC, corporate America, and wrestling, professional wrestling, building up an entire new company, All Elite Wrestling, from the ground up. It's an interesting conversation, and a conversation that Jim Ross has spent most of his life in the business of professional wrestling. As Jim is about 67 years old, he's been in the business for 45 years or better and been a fan of the business before that. So, man, he's seen so many angles. He's talked to so many promoters. He's worked for so many different guys and interacted with so many talented, genius, outrageous, crazy talent that his experience is unprecedented, if that even makes sense. Anyway, he's a good friend of mine, and we hadn't talked in quite some time. I'm out here in Nevada. We missed the earthquakes that rocked California, the Southern California region. My thoughts are with anybody that's affected by those two big-ass earthquakes. Who knows what's to come? We're heading back to Los Angeles here in a couple of days, and we'll get back in the thick of things, and hopefully Southern California doesn't fall off into the Pacific Ocean. But my thoughts are to anybody that was affected by that thing, and I know Ridgecrest was decimated by it. So we'll see what happens from here on out. Who knows when the big one is actually going to happen, because those are two big-ass earthquakes. On a quick note, I have a brand-new show on the USA Network called Straight Up Steve Austin. Season premiere is August 12th. It's going to air right after Monday Night Raw. On this show, I'm hanging out with different celebrity guests. We hang out, we converse, shoot the breeze, have a conversation, converse, and do some activities, and hopefully you'll be entertained by it, because I had an absolute blast filming this show. So if you have as much fun watching it as I did filming it, it's a win-win situation, and hopefully we're around for season two. So please set your DVR, USA Network, August 12th, right after Monday Night Raw. Folks, let's make this open short, because this is about an hour and a half conversation before Sean gets his scissors on it and tightens it up and sweetens it. And I've been told before that I breathe too loud when I'm doing a Skype interview, because I have a deviated septum, and my nose is terrible. This time around, though, my black Labrador Retriever, Callie, is sleeping right beside me. So you might hear her snore and you might hear her breathe during this conversation. Nonetheless, it's all free. This is a free download. We're not charging you for anything. Please enjoy my conversation with Jim Ross, because I enjoyed the hell out of it. Thank you, Jim. Guys can be terrible at taking care of their health. Whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse, guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, our friends at Roman have created an easy way to chat with a doctor online about ED and get it taken care of. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, awkward face-to-face conversations, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. Roman lets you handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/Austin and fill out a brief medical onboarding. Then just talk to a doctor and you'll get a medication delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging with free 2-day shipping. Just for listeners of the Steve Austin Show, go to GetRoman.com/Austin for a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. Find out what will work for you when it comes to overcoming ED. It's definitely worth your time. One more time, that's GetRoman.com/Austin for your free online medical visit and 2-day shipping. Check it out.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
All right, check 1, 2. I think I'm rolling sound right now with my good friend Jim Ross over in Norman, Oklahoma. I didn't know that I was going to be doing any more Skype interviews, but according to my schedule, I am. And my guest today is Jim Ross. Jim, how are you?
I'm good, Steve. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
We hadn't talked in quite some time since you joined with AEW, and you called me out of the blue the other day. So it was good to reconnect with you and hear your voice. Been happy for your success and happy for what you're doing over in AEW. Other than that, what have you been up to lately, man? It's been a while.
Well, I'm doing some DIY projects, except I'm not doing any of the work.
My specialty, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have it hired to do. I want to perpetuate the economy best I can. I spent about $25,000 on my backyard this year. And then I just got through redecorating my kitchen and taking a part of a load-bearing wall out and eliminating some cabinet space and doing some stuff like that. And I bought me a new refrigerator. I'm an exciting son of a bitch now. I bought me a new fridge. I got me a new oven. And the irony of that is I bought a brand new oven. The oven was there when the house was built about 15 years ago. And since Jan got killed, I have not used that oven one time.
Oh, man.
I'm not really a baker, by the way.
Yeah.
Let's get the word out there right now to rebuke all these rumors of my lust for baking. I don't have that. I like to eat baking, but I'm not a baker. So I got me a new refrigerator, microwave, oven, kitchen table, all new furniture. I gave everything away. Somebody said, do it on Craigslist. I said, I want any part of Craigslist. But you know what I mean. I've been doing some projects around the house, and I've built me an outdoor kitchen.
Hey, let me go back to that stove, though, because that's a funny thing you bring it up, because guys don't really use stoves. I mean, I've got one, just like you do. But, man, I'm a cooktop guy. That or microwave. And it's a protein and a carb, whether it's a baked potato or some broccoli or whatever. It's a two-course meal. Guys, and I get my barbecue pit. I use my smoker and my barbecue pit. But, man, we don't really utilize the stove. And did you decide or did you think about 1 second of maybe say, hey, let me fly Chip and Joanna Gaines in and help out with this process?
I thought about a lot of things. I got a handyman that he built my kitchen by himself. He thought of putting recessed lighting in. He built the roof. He poured the concrete. He's amazing. He could do plumbing. He could do electrical work. And so he's become my right-hand guy. Then I got another guy that handles everything on the outside. So if I can have the bug guys come or the pool guy comes or whomever, the yard guy handles all that. So I kind of keep myself out of that fray because I don't want to start up any impromptu meet and greets back here in the backyard or just take a bunch of selfies or some of that stuff. So don't mind taking the selfies, but I'd rather do a meet and greet when I'm getting paid or in another area other than my backyard. That's all.
Just because you're changing the house around, it's been a few years since Jan's untimely death, has changing things around? I mean, how are you doing? Because we haven't talked in a while, but has that eased the pain, changing things around and getting things, you know, just, hey, man, I'm redoing things. I'm kind of doing a makeover and just trying to heal up. Has that helped you?
Yeah. Yeah, it's helped me. It's, well, first of all, it's much like AEW. It's kept me busy.
Yes.
And that's really my issue was I became almost a recluse. I'd make trips to the liquor store or the grocery store, and that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, hell, I looked in the mirror and I hadn't shaved, and like, you know, I'd shave every six or 10 days. And when you get to be my age and you don't want those white whiskers popping out everywhere, I don't look like David Letterman all of a sudden. So, you know, I see white whiskers everywhere. I'm having to shave. I don't know when I last showered. I didn't even have the windows open. I had these blinds all closed. I didn't take phone calls. I looked at my phone. You missed this call. You missed this call. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I got tired of everybody else's sad story, man. I just want to be left alone for a little while, because here's what happens when you're grieving. So everybody, and I'm the same way, so I'm guilty too. You feel compelled to tell the person that's grieving a more grieve-worthy story. Well, I know how you feel, JR, but let me tell you what happened to me. First of all, my 7 cats got killed. They got in the dryer. And then, you know, you hear all these goddamn stories. Everybody's got to trump somebody. Your misery is not going to help my discomfort. But thanks for trying. But so I just kind of got off the grid there, man. And I wasn't being booked. You know, in 2018, I got booked twice by WWE. I went to the New York City's. You were there, I think. Raw 25.
Yes, sir.
I was at the little building and sitting on my fat ass for 4 hours and called 1 4-minute match. That was very good booking. Really using your resources well. So then I went to Saudi Arabia, and I was in the country of Saudi Arabia for about 10 hours. It took me 3 days to get there and back. I slept in a bed about 6 hours on horizontal. But I got a great payday. You know, I got a great payday for going over there. And I was on the prince had requested Lawler and me, because that's what he grew up hearing. So they put us on the – how they got by with this. Oh, we'll use them. Oh, yeah. So they put us on the pregame show, and we had the commentary during the prayer hour. They have a prayer there, Steve. I'm sure you're very familiar with the religious practices of the Saudis. But, you know, they have a prayer during the middle of the show, and we had to stop wrestling, but we could still do the halftime show. So we did a prayer. I did a prayer show. I felt like Jimmy Swagger or somebody. And then we did something else, wrap it up, went straight to the goddamn airport and watched people walk around in civilian clothes, carry machine guns over their shoulder. And you don't know who's the good guys and who's the bad guys, man. Thank God I was wearing that hat. Because that's the international peacemaker. You think maybe pick a selfie? Sure, pal. Let's just put that gun a little different direction here.
You've been broadcasting for 45 years,
well,
right?
Damn. Yeah.
Okay. So starting back in, you know, what, Tri-State or whatever, before Bill Watts bought in. He was refereeing from 74 to 77. I'm just making this up, just kind of giving you a roundabout.
Yeah. Well, I also had that Abe Lincoln, Stephen Douglas match back in Illinois in the 1860s.
That was beard versus beard.
And they got double juice. It was a goddamn mess.
So, according to the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, you were the best television announcer 1988 to 93, 1998 to 2001, 2006, 2007, 2009, 2012. You're in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame from in 1999 class, WWE Hall of Fame in 2007. You've been on several booking committees. You were the head of talent relations with WWE, and you hired me, The Rock, along with many of the blue chippers that you found. So you have a lifetime in the business, but also history. Before you got into it, you were an avid fan.
Yeah.
So, which leads me to my first group of questions. Just recently, Cody Rhodes took an unprotected chair shot from one Sean Spears.
Yep.
Now, we'll get into that in a minute. My question to you is about the chair. When was the chair introduced? Is a friend or a foe of the business? because for some reason it has been, because it's so readily available, one of the designated tools for a heat-seeking opportunity. When do you first remember chairs being in the business? And, well, we've always remembered them from old footage, but they were used in a different fashion, because a lot of times they didn't fold them up, and that guy would just slam a chair down in the position that someone would sit in it without the force that today's guys and guys during the Attitude Era, my era, were generating back in the day. What are your thoughts on the chair, just from its introduction or its symbolism, its impact, wood to steel? Let's talk about the frickin' chair.
Yeah, the chair thing, first of all, those steel folding chairs that we see today utilized as props and shortcuts was what people sat in. It's just what was there. So it was a manufactured, plant. It was actually being used. People sat in them. I remember when I first did my first wrestling show in about the mid-70s, 74, 5, 6, something like that. That's what we sat on, folding chairs. I thought I'd fart through silk when I got a big, nice crumpled chair at TVS, man, back in the day. So it was just there, Steve. But it's like a lot of things in wrestling. It's overdone. A little goes a long way. And some of that stuff that we see, and the chair is a perfect example. It's a shortcut that people use as a crutch, and it's overused. Now, I'm not a big believer, a big advocate of getting hit in the head with a steel chair in any way. I called it like I saw it. Cody turned his head. He got hit in the side of the head. You know, at least it didn't bust his face open, because with that chair malfunction, there's no telling what he'd look like with that, man. So I'm not a big fan of it. But it's like calling a football play. I might want to run the ball right now, and you want to throw it. So but both of them may get us a touchdown. Hell, I don't know. But it's overdone.
Now that we've advanced to, you know, everything that we know about CTE, how would you just sit there and absorb and describe it? Because you didn't know then what we know now.
As I alluded to this earlier, I'll just come out and say what I would do. I wouldn't do any more chair shots to the head. We're done with that business. And if I can't have a team around me that are creative enough to get me the results of what I want in this angle of the storyline without having to scramble somebody's brains for real, then I need to find some more hands, because we got the wrong staff here. Because you son of a bitch, your last original idea died of loneliness. Come on. Right. We get a chair shot in. Now, then I see here's another thing about the chair shots. Watch the chair shots today when they're used. It's almost like the guys get on all fours, a doggy style position, so that they can be in position to be hit in the back, because that's the only place that they really want to take a chair shot. And nobody loses by getting hit in the chair in the back with a chair. So you're getting these guys, these large men and some women, they're getting in a doggy style position. Here they are getting set, waiting and waiting. Expose, and then they get hit with a chair, and nobody ever loses because of that, or wins, more specifically. So I'd say ixnay the chairs, because they look like shit, the spots are wore out, and there's no reason to take a chance and damaging somebody's brain over a goddamn high spot. It just doesn't make any sense. Or a finish, or the finish at WrestleMania, it doesn't make sense to me. So I'd say the hell with the chairs. Figure out something else. And if you can't, we need to get more creative people involved in this solving this problem.
I agree with you. I think it's overdone. But in this day and age, you know, a one-off here or there, because if you don't make it so frequent, and it is unimaginative at this point in time, but as far as taking it, that chair shot, you know, all of a sudden it opened up Pandora's box for the IWC and even a bigger universe than the IWC. And to me, when I look at the chair shot, as overdone as it is, as many times as we've seen it, it has been a part of the professional wrestling landscape for a long time. You know, I'm not going to say in defense of it. I'm just saying when you're on the receiving end, it is a calculated risk.
Yeah.
And you know,
a lot of things are.
Look at Evel,
right?
Knievel. When Evel Knievel's jumping buses in Caesar's Palace or trying to jump a Snake River Canyon on a jet, which blew up on him. That didn't work. The parachute deployed, but it was a calculated risk.
Right.
So, you know, at what point it's overdone, it's too much, but it is a calculated risk. And if a guy is willing to take that risk, I say more power to him. But then there comes that trust factor as well.
Yeah. Here's the issue with that, though, Steve. As long as the boys have that chair shot to the head in their pocket, where they can use it on a special occasion. Your special occasion may be different definitively than their special occasion. So as long as they have that option, they're going to go to it as often as they can because this is my special occasion.
But let's move on off the chairs. Let's get into one other thing before I want to ask you about AEW and the shapings of trying to make history or build history, because I had Tony Khan on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and you guys are basically starting from scratch. And also right. In talking to Jericho, you know, goes, this hasn't been done in a long time, creating a whole new federation. But just along the lines of the chair shot, before we get into the world of AEW, the Blade in today's 2019 moving forward landscape, to me, you know, we start off back in the day with the hard ways, and then they figured out it was an easy way to do it, so to speak. I've come a razor blade. In today's corporate PC world, you know, how is that looked upon in your eyes because of your experience with everything you've seen and you're still involved right now?
I think it was used in a timely way, not a weekly way, not every big show way. The same thing going back to your reasoning on your chair shots. If it fits the moment and it makes the moment more dramatic and helps it get talents over, stories over, et cetera, then I have no issues with it. It's safer than the chair shots, obviously. And there's ways to make sure you're sanitary and all that good stuff and using your own weapon and all that. I remember that time you cut me in Oklahoma City. I don't know what the hell you used. I thought it was a steel chainsaw. And then, folks, here's what happens. He beats the shit out of me, right? He's turning heel. It's a big heel turn right after WrestleMania 17. And he, this son of a bitch hit me so, I'd never been hit that hard in a real fight in my life. And I'm thinking, well, that was a slip up. He ain't going to do that again. Kaboom! Here come another one. So we get in the back, and he says, well, I had to make it look good. You know, we're doing TV. I said, it's on tape. They can edit it. God damn it. So I had knuckle knocks all over my head. And did you use a scalpel or something? Remember that?
Yeah, I do remember. But you got to remember that was a pretty surgical cut. I mean, it was a quick on the fly job. And I'm not the Surgeon General, but that was nice work. And I told you then, and I don't want to talk about it again because that's just another story I've talked about a lot. You know, we had to make it look good, and I was trying so hard, Jim. And obviously, you're one of my best friends in the business and, of course, on screen. So it was hard to beat the hell out of you. It really was. But I was trying so hard to get heat and be hated that, you know, I figured the harder I hit you, the, you know, more people would hate me. And they look good as well. But sometimes things that look good hurt like hell, or things that hurt like hell don't look good. Those hurt like hell and they look good. So I was just trying hard to get heat.
Well, you sure did. I was pissed. You got heat with me. I can tell you that. It worked for me. The Blade's not nearly in the danger zone to me as the chair stuff. So I could see judicious use of color, and I think most sponsors would understand it.
Yeah, it's like using diuretics for this or something else for that. I mean, every sport or culture or subculture or whatever has their things that they use for whatever. And that blade is something that's been in the business for a long time. And I think, like you said, judiciously used in the right time for a specific, you know, or a response. Yes, it still flies, but obviously too much is going to be not good at all.
No.
Hey, one of my things in looking at what you guys are doing in AEW, I saw the All In pay-per-view, which that was a standalone thing, I guess, from my understanding. Then Double or Nothing, which we just saw. I love that pay-per-view. And now pay-per-view coming back up in Chicago, Schaumburg area. So all right. Now we're going to All Out. But and then in the fall, moving to TNT on a 2-hour live weekly show.
Yeah.
So I think it's an exciting time for you guys because you guys are getting a chance to create your own world and redefine, you know, what a wrestling company is. Whether it's like, and it's the ability for the a fan to suspend disbelief and totally buy in. And levy fines, suspensions, enforce the rules where there's consequences to some of these rule breakers that break rules. I mean, I really believe that people want to believe. And so you guys have a fresh piece of canvas, so to speak,
yep.
to paint
sure
your
do.
Picture. How do you look forward to this opportunity and how to go about it?
Well, my role there, Steve, my official title is a senior advisor. And the reason I wanted to name myself senior advisor and not one of the EVPs is I felt like that we had plenty of EVPs. Young Bucks are EVPs. Cody's an EVP. Kenny Omega's an EVP. It sure as hell didn't my sad fat ass being one of them. So I already been an EVP, so I'm good. So I told Tony Khan, I said, this make me the senior advisor. So he liked that title. And he said, why do you want to be the senior advisor? Because it's real simple, man. This is the wrestling business. The senior advisor gets to take credit for all the good stuff and disavow any knowledge of things that suck. So he laughed, you know. So anyway, I gave him some, you know, one of my ideas was time limits. All the matches are going to have time limits. How do you have a sport, even the women's, congratulations to the United States women for winning the World Cup. How do you have a sporting event without some rules and regulations? There's a time limit even in the World Cup. We know there's the basketball, and these are strategic things that fans can buy into and understand psychologies that affect the game as the time is reflected. So if you're in the fourth quarter and you're down seven, you goddamn better try to score. I get it, because the quarter is almost over and there ain't no more quarters. So there's a whole lot of things that can go on there. We saw on our last show we did in Daytona Beach, Cody went to a 20-minute time limit draw. Hell, I don't remember the last time I called a 20-minute time limit draw. So we're trying to get back to some basic things that can be utilized by a smart, creative bunch to their benefit, Steve. Time limits, rules. You got to have rules so the heels can break them, because there's such a fine line nowadays in who's a goddamn babyface and who's a heel. You know, so I believe that if we get back to that, we're going to be better off. And I think that's kind of the direction we're heading. And every week, every time we do a TV, like this Saturday night, as I mentioned on brlive.com, it's free in the States. You know, outside the States, I think a Fight app has it. So and it's doing good numbers. People are watching. But we're growing, man. We got a bunch of, we're like a expansion team.
I know y'all do have a very talented locker room, but let's talk about the broadcast team, because you're the anchor there. Jim Ross, Alex Mervez, and Excalibur. Right. Did you guys get a chance to do any kind of rehearsal before Double or Nothing to get on the same page? Because you produced and mentored so many on-air talents during your years while you were broadcasting and, you know, leading the teams. And you know, just like guys mentoring me when I got in the business. Mm-hmm. So what did you do as far as to, hey, man, guys, here's what we do. Tell me the story. How did that come about?
Well, the three of us, Alex and Excalibur, and I met in Atlanta. We actually went to DDP's yoga studio. He's got a television studio there, too.
Isn't that an amazing studio he has?
Yeah, a slick operation. Really slick. He's done a great job. Proud of Dallas. The world's greatest overachiever.
Yes.
35 years old, not the greatest athlete in the world, and he made himself a star. Figure that out, because hard work's the deal. But nonetheless, we went there. We watched a bunch of matches, commentated, trying to find our rhythm. You know, my vision was that what they wanted me to be the anchor. So okay, I'll be the anchor. So I'll start and end the segments. Excalibur wrestled for many years, and you know, it's a gimmick because he's wearing a mask, and we don't know why he's wearing a mask. I said, when I was going to introduce him by saying, I'm here, the only masked man I've ever worked with, and I don't know why. I don't know why he's a masked man, but nonetheless, well, I didn't do that smart-ass shit. He's really, really good. He's smart. He's got a great voice. It carries. It cuts through the bullshit. And then we have Alex Marvez, who will be rejoining us this Saturday night. And I always thought Alex's role was something like a Jay Glazer. The insider.
Yeah.
And so he could be either on camera, he could be audio bite, he could be in the locker room area, but he could be wherever his services were needed. But his primary service to the show would be to be providing information that we heretofore would not have had the opportunity to have. And so that's kind of where I see it. That first show with everybody's adrenaline going crazy, and I think we all got in the mindset that maybe we get paid by the word, and we don't. we worked on that little deal. And look, they're good guys. And Steve, here's the thing about it. Even if they screw up, even if they misstep, it will be out of effort and not out of empathy. And they are the kind of guys that have such a good attitude, professional, good to be around, that it's hard to be pissed off at them. I've been with announcers that had that thought their doo-doo didn't stink, and they reinvented how to announce it. All they did was go out there and do an hour-long promo about themselves, get themselves over. That's how the boys work. You know, just shoot the shit. But these guys are good. So we're going to have to get better. And we will get better. Our goal is to get better. And we hope that all this work we're doing in this show Saturday in Jacksonville, coming up in Chicago in August 31st, by the time we get on the air, I'm not sure exactly the date. I've heard two or three stories. It's early October. I think it's going to be on a Wednesday night, but that's not been confirmed to me, because Tuesdays and Thursdays are big basketball nights on TNT. And we sure as hell don't want to have to dance right around the basketball schedule. So I'm thinking, logically, by process of elimination, it looks like it's going to be Wednesday night. So we'll see.
Going back to Double or Nothing, how did you feel going into that? Because I know you had been, last time you'd called, was doing New Japan Pro Wrestling with Josh Barnett.
Yep.
And now you're back to an American-based product, again, starting from scratch, but storyline-based. Not that the Japanese wrestling isn't, but certainly American wrestling is based on angles. And mm-hmm. I believe, emotions sell tickets and personal issues sell tickets. How did you feel going into the event? Because it felt like as the event went on, and I think it's kind of like I just finished shooting a show, straight up Steve Austin. As it went on, I became more comfortable.
Sure.
And so, yeah, riding a bike, once you learn how to ride a bike, if you get back on it after you ain't been on it in a while, hey, you still got it. You still got it. But you loosened up towards the end of the broadcast. And how did you feel about your performance, and how do you look forward to All Out? Because to me, you got your rhythm back. I mean, you're the greatest announcer of all time, and you painted so many of my stories in such vivid fashion. You were a definite contributing factor in the Stone Cold character getting over. So how did you feel about your efforts in the broadcast?
Well, even though I'm an old bastard and I've been doing this a long time, and I certainly appreciate your kind remarks, obviously, there's something to be – I have to live up to a certain amount of that. I've been told I'm really good by so many of my fans, our fans, friends, peers, guys like you who I love and respect, that I feel an obligation that anything less than that in their eyes, your eyes, is not a success. So, and that may be an egotistic point of view, but it motivates me. And also the audience today, Steve, because of social media and the fact that they can expound on their feelings in a matter of seconds. The social media was around, Steve, in the Attitude Era, but nothing like today. My God, it's at every corner. I go to the grocery store, somebody put a picture on Instagram or something. And this is because they saw JR at the frozen food counter or whatever, So it's harder. It's challenging. I felt a little apprehensive. I felt a little unsure. So it made me a little edgy, which I liked being edgy. And I thought by the time we got about halfway through the main show that I'd found where I was looking for, rhythm-wise. You got to find your rhythm. And the two guys, Excalibur and Alex, had kind of found their spot. But that's the last time we worked together. So now we got to start all over this Saturday and try to find that rhythm again and find it earlier than halfway through the damn show. So we got a lot of work to do on this damn thing, but it'll be good. It'll be good.
As a guy who's called this for all these decades, how do you want to try to call or present it with all the different errors that you've seen from a total, everybody thought it was a shoot back in the day, to now being a known work in a very corporate PC world? How do you present today's product that is AEW?
That's a great question, and it's got a, I don't know if I even have the right answer. So much of my stuff that seemed to stick with the general populace that are wrestling fans. I was in a line the other day in Dallas, and this in the first class line to get on board a plane, and this guy was behind me with his kid, and he was really, really close, like in my space. And I turned around, so he's behind me, and he says, as God is my witness, he's broken in half. So now he started all the quotes and mixed slowly going off the sale, right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, okay, now the next time he's a little closer, close enough that his breath is hot on my neck, and okay, I'm here. I'm gonna. This is not gonna happen. I turn around, and say, "Hey, look!" And the kids, the little boys, about 12, 13, says, "We're like the hope for the family, because it's the boy and the dad. We're sorry, JR, but he does this all the time at home, and my mom hates it. So I said, your dad quotes all that one call. No, he quotes all your calls. Climb the ladder, kid. Make yourself famous, or something. Jeff Hardy and the Undertaker. You know, the Austin era has begun, or whatever it might have been. And those are never written down.
Right.
I didn't. Okay. Well, Steve does this. I'll do that. And this, we'll take all the realism and all the spontaneity out of it. So I can tell you is that you guys might have been working, but when I was announcing, brother, I was shooting. Because I didn't know the damn finishes half the damn time. You know, some of it was a lot logical. But when Foley was going off the sale, nobody told me about that spot. I thought I would. If somebody said, you want to do it? I said, no. Because how the hell can you survive that? So now we get another guy on a short roster anyway that's already broken to a zillion pieces. You know, had to go to the hospital in Pittsburgh and take him off the line. You can't use him. So it's a feel thing for me. And as long as I can still feel this business, I want to try to stay in it. I'm 67. I'm healthier than I've ever been. All my vital stuff is great. My numbers are good. I'm eating right. I'm taking right supplements. I need to do more exercise, granted, and that's in the works. And a lot of people didn't know I broke my back a year ago at an OU game. And so I had to get out of the gym for about a year. So it's really screwed up my Mr. America plans and Mr. Senior Bodybuilding contest. It's kind of screwed that up. But seriously, if I lose that feeling, I got to get out.
I agree with you 100% on the feeling thing, man. Stevie Ray Vaughan is one of my favorite musicians, probably the favorite. And you can listen to him, but man, you feel that guy playing. And so
yeah.
I always thought as Stone Cold, you know, those people live vicariously through the you know, storylines and the actions, the angles that I was doing. And I think they felt them. We know it's a work, Jim, but you got to feel it.
Yeah, you got to feel it. And I feel a lot of things with AEW. I feel a lot of these young kids that haven't had their cup of coffee yet. And I know how I felt that one day in Shreveport at KTVS TV when Watts told me to go to Dillard's and get a blue blazer, a light blue shirt, and a red tie because I'm doing the commentary that day. I know how I felt. And because that television show we're doing was going to be seen by my mom, seriously, and my dad, my grandparents, my buddies. It was a big deal to me, man. So now you got these kids on these stages like Bleacher Report live and all that stuff. But think about this. Think about October. Think about TNT, the network that carries the NBA, a major network. And there's where you get a chance to make yourself famous and make yourself a lot of money. And this company's proven they'll pay a lot of money for what they want. So everybody's got a chance to make themselves more valuable. I'm looking forward to that. But I love being around those kids. Steve, they flock to me like I feel honored. They want to ask so many questions because there's not a scenario that can happen there that I haven't experienced in one way or another.
Well, that's one of the things I lost my train of thought a while ago because I went on this tangent about feel. But my question to you was, you're feeling this and we're out there working our ass off and you're just calling it like you see it. And for some reason, somehow, some way, on one particular evening, I was Stone Cold Steve Austin, but you referred to me as a Texas rattlesnake. You and I had never had that discussion, Jim. You never said, hey, Steve, I got this nickname I want to drop on you. You just said it.
I felt it.
Did that just come out of the blue? Did you ad-lib that? Because, as you know, that become, you know, a huge trademark of who and what I was.
Yeah.
And are these new guys, are you looking to do that with these new guys? Sorry, two questions.
If I feel it, yeah, absolutely. But I got to feel it. And for whatever reason, your in-ring image, not from a physical standpoint necessarily, and obviously, because you ain't got rattlers on your ass, so there's no similarities physically. The mannerisms, the motivation, the mindset. You can't trust this son of a bitch. I also said one time later on that rattlesnakes don't make good corporate pets.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, so I felt that through that character because I believed in the character. I believed in Stone Cold and how it was evolving. I told somebody the story the other day. I said, Steve never wanted to be a baby face. And I remember we were somewhere in some little old ninja ass TV thing, and because we weren't drawing a lot at that time. We were getting ready to. And I said, you did something out there that night. And I said, well, I can feel that little movement that you're going to be a big ass baby face here, buddy. Oh, bullshit. You know, I get cussed out, dog cussed. No, I don't want to be a goddamn, I want to be a heel. Well, okay. I said, hey, I got an idea for you because I knew your motivation. Money. Here's some numbers. Next time I see you, I'll bring you some numbers or so what the guys have done on their t-shirt sales. And that changed the game at that point. Well, you know, it might not be such a bad deal if I got to change my style. Nobody wants you to change your style there, Ricky Steamboat. You're all right.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla letting you know about my newest podcast, Going Racing. Me and Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, that is. We'll highlight the fastest cars. We'll talk about the best races and the best celebrities in motorsports. Subscribe now at Podcast One.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Jim, what is the demographic you think AEW is catering to? Is it the 18-24 males? Is it wrestling fans in general? Is it the millennials? Who is it?
Any marketer will say we want everybody. That's impossible. I think that they, from what I have seen at their events, including last year in Chicago, the one I called in Vegas here a while back, and what we've done subsequently, a lot of young males, 18-24, you're right about that, 18-34, and those are very desirable demographics to attract because they're kind of fickle. They move around. They like something for a while, then they don't like it, then they like something else for a while. So sometimes you don't know how long they're going to reside at your residency in that regard. So I think that's probably it. But, you know, eventually we hope that our fundamentals and how we present pro wrestling, as a lot of people in the older demographic remember it when they were influenced by it, we can take them back to that time if we can find the talents that can actually pull off that kind of game plan.
Here's a question. Monday Night Wars, WCW versus WWE, Nitro versus Raw, and everybody was doing crazy numbers. We got our ass kicked for 2 years. You remember this vividly. Then we kind of took over.
Yeah.
But back in the day when you combined the ratings, the millions of people, I've asked this question to Tony Khan a few weeks ago, so I'll ask you. You know, if there's 2 or 3 million people watching Raw, you know, and back in the day between two companies, there's around 10 million. Where did everybody go, in your opinion, because you've been around this damn business forever?
They lost interest, and nothing changed. There's nothing new, compelling, nothing fresh. It was the same thing. You watch, you know, and I'm not knocking Monday Night Raw, but look, they're always going to get the first knock if you want to perceive it as such, because they will always be the biggest dog in the yard. And I get a kick out of some of these amateur armchair analysts that want to bring up, well, it's going to be competition. Oh, AEW is going to, they're going to be great competition with WWE. Are you kidding me? Right now, and maybe someday, there'll be a competitor, but WWE's got such a long head start on everybody. They got that global footprint. You know, it's a publicly traded company. They got money. They got huge money from these TV deals. Nobody's going to catch WWE, and that should not be anybody's goal. It sure as hell isn't mine. I don't care what they do. I hope they do well, and I got friends that work there, and they made me a lot of money, and I'm very blessed. But I don't care, man, if they... how they do is how we do.
Can you guys reconnect the 6 to 7 million people that stopped watching, or have they moved on? Or how do you tap into the 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds coming up now that are looking for action based television?
Social media. Social media is going to be such a bigger part of what we do and everybody does. And the great thing about the Young Bucks, got a great social media following. They sold a lot of merchandise. They remind me of you because they're very ambitious. They're all coming up with different designs and ideas. I think that's pretty cool. It's going to take time, but the thing is, you hear that all the time. Well, they got the Khan families, they're going to have the money to just carry to see this thing out. Well, trust me, they got the money to carry this thing forward. Trust me. Now, whether they get into this thing a year and a half, 2 years, and they don't like it, and they're losing their bleeding money, they may make a business decision and change their mind. Hell, I don't know. But I do know that they're in it for the long haul, and we have financing, and we have a great partnership with the TNT and Bleacher Report and all that stuff. So the foundation is there, Steve, where you've got a promotion that has money. They have a TV deal in place. Now, can we attract and recruit the kind of talents it's going to take to execute what Tony Khan believes, what Cody Rhodes believes, and certainly what I believe, what you believe, is fundamental soundness. Please give me some logic. Don't make me embarrassed to watch wrestling with my buddies anymore. That's a bad feeling, man.
And I remember there periods of the business. I remember down when I was in WCW, it was in the early 90s, and WWF, man, it was a finish, and one of the Samoans slipped on a banana peel, a real banana peel, and I was like, man, because we were wrestling down there in Atlanta, and hey, that was, but you know, you always knew that was the big time, the big leagues, but that wasn't the way I wanted the business to be seen, you know, shoot yeah. style stuff, man, that will be interesting. But right. Cody Rhodes, in one of the interviews I saw on him, made a very bold statement. And he says, we own professional wrestling. Bold statement.
Yeah. Youth. He's young. I admire his self-confidence. And he's got a load of it. And they've had some good luck. You know, we've had good luck there. Starting last fall when they did that first show. Sold it out, boom, immediately. The fact that they go to Vegas, challenging market, and they boom, they sell that one out. So we did well in Daytona Beach. I don't think it was a sellout, but it was close. And then we have Jacksonville this Saturday, and that's going to be good. It's outdoors at an amphitheater, which is nice in the summertime in Florida. I'll be sweating Crisco. Then of course our show in Chicago sold out. So they've had some early success. It'll be interesting to see how people respond in that company to the ratings. Like you said, Steve, we were there. It got beat 83 weeks in a row.
Yep.
And I tell people, I said, all we could do, we didn't commiserate, kumbaya, nobody. We just went back to work. We had a game to play.
Was it a statement to differentiate AEW as professional wrestling versus WWE, which is sports entertainment? Now, one can make a case that they're both the same thing. But when you hear that professional wrestling, I always call myself a professional wrestler or a former professional wrestling. Is he drawing a line there between, hey, here's what we do, here's what they do, and there is a difference. Is that the mindset?
That's part of it, yeah, absolutely. A lot of it is that youthful PMV. I think that there is a difference. You'll never hear me say sports entertainment on our air. I don't plan on ever mentioning WWE's name on our air unless I'm ordered to. I see no reason in it. Now, if the other guys choose to do that, and it's okay with the office, that's what they want, then have at it. To me, you know, downplaying them or dissing them is childish and unprofessional, Mickey Mouse bullshit. And the same thing for them. They're the biggest dog in the yard, and how do you want to turn yourself heel? You turn yourself heel by bitching and moaning that, you know, this company's not competition. We're this. We're that. Well, then take it easy, Tiger. You know, hey, you know, God dang, man, you're making yourself look bad. Are you trying to turn yourself heel?
But focusing, and I know, and speaking with Tony Khan and listening to Cody, and I think you're going to believe this is be along with this as well, because I'm sure this is wins and losses to me indeed matter. To me, they're paramount. I mean, yeah. You know, you didn't build Stone Cold up. You know, once I came up, turned into Stone Cold, and I turned into this whoop-ass machine by going out there and getting beat every night. Now, coming in as a ringmaster, hell, I got beat every damn single night on the road. I learned how to lose, and you can get over losing, because you can learn how to lose to learn how to win.
You did, though. You got over to it. You got over in that role.
Yeah, I did. But it does matter, and I just can't believe you. And I'm not a fan of 50-50 booking. I mean, no. Some guys, you light them on fire, and then every now and then they'll slip on something and go down. But I'm a firm believer, and if you look at any kind of ranking system, if you look at the NFL, we're talking football analogies all day long here. Those win-loss records matter because that puts you either as a home field advantage versus playing on the road to get yourself through the damn playoff system. And if you have a shitty record, you ain't going nowhere. You're staying home because the wins and losses mattered.
And they do matter, and that's. Yeah, they matter in AEW. The thing that I hope that we never get to the pattern of this. Stone Cold comes out, and he wrestles, and he wins, and the heel gets assaulted. And, we have to get the guy's heat back. Okay, well, what'd you do for Austin? Well, we didn't do anything. He got to win. But you just beat the shit out of him. Somewhere along the way, the logic has gotten completely muddled. We're not talking even logic here. This is absolutely ignorant that we would think that to the crowd, the live audience is sitting there watching this goddamn thing. They're not processing this information like you are. Let the guy get his win and get the hell out of there. Let the heel throw a bitch fit, whatever. Cut a promo, but he don't have to go beat the guy up. And WWE does that a lot. I hope that we don't do it. And I think sometimes over the years, certain talents had influence, Steve, and they were able to negotiate that. So if you're a red hot heel and you had a connection to the office, and you're going to help, you do the honors to somebody, but brother, I got to get my stuff back. Okay, so then you do. Now the whole damn thing is you didn't move forward an inch. Nobody advanced their persona or nothing one goddamn inch. But and we see that on TV an awful lot. I hope we don't get into that. You got to be able to, like you said, Steve. You're halfway being funny. But you got to learn to work, and learning to work is learning to lose with some fucking dignity. Excuse my language.
Talk about the announced team as it's going to go towards the fall product that's going to be live television. One of the things that I really enjoyed about the double, another thing was I loved your on screens because I hadn't seen those in a long time. And to me, when you're on screen laying some info down or putting some 411 out there or talking about somebody, man, and to me, because you called so many of my matches, I mean, you know, and I saw you do so many things at NWA and Mid-South. I mean, that's the man talking about you right there. So I enjoyed that. But I also enjoyed that you guys are staying focused on the product in the ring. You're staying focused on the wrestling match in the ring. And then that match in the ring may pertain or lead into a potential storyline because of an angle you're working. But to me, what I'm watching fits what I'm listening to. And I really enjoy that. And I think that's a strength.
Well, I appreciate that. I think that we can't, as broadcasters, it's very challenging to be a good enough storyteller to be telling a story about subject A while I'm actually watching subject B on television. There's going to be an inevitable disconnect there, Steve, in that regard. Some of that process is going to be not retained. And I've always thought of this. You know, I got my start working for Cowboy Bill Watts, who was a big-time football player at OU, played in the AFL, was an outstanding athlete, wrestled for years. Blah blah blah. But Bill was a sports fan, so when we were calling matches, he never veered off stream unless we were on camera pitching a show coming to the Superdome or something. We didn't do that. We called the match, and inside the calling of the match, we interwove the narrative, and we didn't go back and recapture all the time and bring forward and bring. Sometimes I hear on TV, folks watch this sometimes. You got a wrestler striking with their elbows, fists, kicks, whatever. And while they're actually making contact and striking, the announcers are telling backstory. All they're doing is smarting the damn audience. Oh, look, folks, this is not the finish. Everybody ever loses on the beatdown. And plus, they get 6 more minutes of TV time.
What about just the increase, if I use the terminology work rate? You know, the business has sped up from when you first started watching. I mean, guys would sit in holds forever. And then, the high spot was invented as a transition to try to get out of a hold. And, guys started, running off those ropes. And then it kind of turned in, man, from Dynamite Kid was way ahead of his time, one of the first high flyers. And I just love to watch that guy's matches. I really like to watch a lot of his early stuff in Calgary against Bret Hart, who's one of my favorites. And Bret was a reality-based, ground-based game inside the ring. But one of the things I loved about Double or Nothing, one of my favorite matches was Dustin versus Cody, and I was wondering what kind of match they were going to have. I don't want to relive the pay-per-view. I've already talked about it, but how basic they were, Jim.
Yeah.
The story was a built story. It was made, you know, however many years ago when maybe Dusty was born. Here, and then here comes Dustin and Cody, who's 33 years old. So they stayed so basic, and then they got that great color. And that was the most I've felt emotionally invested in a match. And I can't tell you how long, and I believe emotions sell tickets, as I've said. Mm-hmm. You're one of those young bucks working with Pentagon and Phoenix. The sequences those guys put together was just off the charts, and I really appreciated that. And then, of course, I just love the hard-hitting aspect of Omega and Jericho. So three different facets, three kind of different combinations of work, but I appreciated all of them.
Yeah.
So you've seen the business come and go from whole base to being what it is now. It, I guess the bottom line, and maybe I don't want to answer my own question, it still has to be reality-based, but I've appreciated watching it evolve, but I guess too much of one, I guess too much of any of it is too much, and you have to have a ratio, a good mix of it.
Yeah, you do. You can't have blood in every match, obviously.
We know that. Obviously.
Things like that. Everything's got to have its own identity, and the talent's got to put their stamp on it, create a stamp, individuality on it. I think that's what you're going to see here with this company. We're going to have some very versatile, different cats wrestling for us, and they all have something that's kind of brought them to the dance. If we are smart enough and they're smart enough, we all have this joint effort that we can make we can raise everybody's game, then we're going to be in some pretty good shape, because I know we're going to discover some kids that continue to grow and become stars. I know that's going to happen. I also know that guys that are thought of today as, boy, this guy could be really, really good, that sometimes don't work out. So it's going to be the journey is what's fun for me. And, you know, I'm jacked about this whole scenario. But I think, Steve, that we got to slow down a little bit. It's like a comedian. A comedian goes out and does A material. A couple of things about this story. A, you do your A material and they're not laughing. What do? Well, you go to B material because you can't memorize your match. I see that even now in some AEW stuff, where talents are so green, they're so insecure, they're so overly sensitive that they feel compelled that they have to memorize every single thing, and that's kiss of death. And it's not any different. It's not an AEW exclusive. You can go to Monday nights or Tuesday night anywhere in the WWE, they're going to do the same thing, man. So I just don't believe that that's something that's good for the business, just like the promos. Let's give it back to the performers. Somewhere along the way, the writers and production people have become as important as the talent. And there's nothing in wrestling, in pro wrestling, is centered around their attractions and the talent. There's got to be a lot of things, and that's, I think it's great. A lot of things change, Steve. And Tony Khan is young. He's bright. As you know, you did a great podcast with him. It killed on the ratings. Did great. And he's aware of this stuff. I mean, and all those guys, they eat and breathe this stuff. The Bucks and Cody and Kenny Omega, they're so consumed in this thing that it's almost easy to get that bug from them. And I hope that the other talents gravitate to that and will put as much of their personalities and their passion into their character as these four guys are doing in their jobs. And they're player coaches, basically. They're player coaches. And I'm not a big fan of the player coach scenario. I don't know. It's hard. Wrestlers, as you well know, Steve, that you got to be able to communicate with them. And for you to be able to communicate with a wrestler or anybody else, they got to trust your ass. And so sometimes somebody will say, well, you're going to say that because you're in the match or whatever. They think that sometimes that the creative process is influenced by the individuals making the decision. It shouldn't. It should always be best what's best for the company. I think that Tony will make sure that happens. But I don't see that jealousy or all that stuff. Everybody's going to win and lose here. Everybody's going to win, but they're going to win and lose.
It seems as time has gone on, the wrestling has been taken from the wrestlers and dictated to them by writers who never wrestled.
Right.
And are trying to form a hypothesis over what should happen when, you know, back when I was in Dallas, you know, I went out there and, you know, Mark Lawrence would ask me a question in front of that, you know, 20 by 20 squared circle in the world famous Sportatorium, and I'd shit out a horrible promo. And man, based upon that and learning and failing and falling and then getting teamed up with Pillman, who was a lightning bolt, saying, man, I better keep up with this guy. And then, you know, but, and, you know, by the time I'd got to WWF, now E, you know, I was 7.5 years in the business. I had a pretty good hand in the ring. You recruited me. We bonded in WCW. But I learned it, you know, and it was nice having people, you know, chip in ideas and help me. But if you've never done it, don't tell me how to do it.
Right, right. Don't tell me what your reaction would be.
Right.
That's the thing about it. So, okay, we want you to do this, and then this is how you would react. But how do you know that's how I would react?
Yeah.
How do you know anybody would react that way? You're imagining a situation that you've never been in and exactly how you want how this is to be reacted to. You got to give the talent, the game back to the talent, and you got to, and the talent's then got to be compelled to raise your shit, man. Let's go.
Yeah.
Pick it up. Pick it up. You know, let's work smooth. Let's work safe. Let's damn sure work snug.
Before we end, Jim, I appreciate giving me the time. Please tell my audience where they can find your podcast, Grill and JR.
Well, Grill and JR, I do a Conrad Thompson, and we have a format. We go back and pick out events. Like I said, I think next week we're going to talk about the Canadian Stampede. We've talked about the Owen Hart situation. We've talked about the 2008 draft, King of the Ring, when Stone Cold won the King of the Ring, got his lip busted. But my story... I said, well, I've heard that story. You ain't heard my story. You weren't sitting at ringside when Owen fell from the rafters. I was. And no one else had that role but me. It's great. So every Thursday morning, 6 o'clock Eastern time, my show drops. Westwood One's doing it. Well, you get it wherever you get Steve's podcast. I think we have the
iTunes,
Spotify, Apple podcasts, all that stuff. So anyway, it's doing great. I appreciate the folks checking us out. It's worth every goddamn cent you pay for it. It's free.
Hey, Jim, thanks a lot.
All right, buddy.
All right, let's give big ups to GEICO for being a loyal sponsor of the Steve Austin Show. Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you can be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today. All right, everybody, give me a go home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank Jim Ross for joining me on the show. Check out Jim Ross's podcast. It's called Grillin' JR. Jim Ross, along with Conrad Thompson, teaming up to talk about all things professional wrestling. They got a great lineup of topics that they cover, in-depth research. They're on the Westwood One platform, but you can find them on Spotify. You can find them on iTunes, Apple. Wherever you can find my podcast, you can find his, Grillin' JR. My good friend, thank you for the time. Hey, don't forget to rate and review the Steve Austin Show on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends to check us out. And if you want to reach me here on the podcast, send an email to questions@steveaustinshow.com. I am very interested in doing a question and answer podcast, so please send your questions to that address, questions@steveaustinshow.com. Hey, before I sign off, I got a badass beer. This beer has been going out on the market for over 3 years now, and it is taking the beer world by storm in the IPA division. In my opinion, and that's a pretty good opinion, it's the best IPA in the United States of America. Broken Skull IPA is made by El Segundo Brewing Company, and you can find it at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. And if you're not in California, you could be SOL. And also involved in the pocket knife business, and I have two badass collaborations with Cold Steel Knives of Ventura, California. Cold Steel is known the world around for making the sharpest, baddest blades there is, anytime, anywhere. Broken Skull Knife and a Working Man's Knife. You can find it at my Amazon store. Amazon's got the best price on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin. And when I'm out in the woods, you will find me riding a Kawasaki, and that's the bottom line. Folks, I am on social media, Twitter and Instagram, @SteveAustinBSR. Again, if you have a question, if you want to send it to me via a tweet on Twitter, please send it. I want to do a Q&A show. I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially Roman, GEICO, and betonline.ag. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. If you need more info on my sponsors, check out the show description to this episode for details. Folks, until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.